Welcome to the Small Batch edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here in the studio with Stephen Thompson of NPR Music. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
Well, Stephen and I are together in the studio today because this coming Sunday is the Super Bowl. And when it comes to the culture of the Super Bowl, there's only one thing more important than the game, and that's the snacks. Fortunately, we have brought in extra help for your Super Bowl Sunday and ours. With us from New York is Dan Pashman, host of the Sporkful Food Podcast at WNYC, which is available wherever you get your podcasts. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Stephen. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Now, longtime Pop Culture Happy Hour listeners are likely aware that Stephen holds an annual Super Bowl party called Chicken Bowl, which is, among other things, where Stephen and I first met in person. Stephen, can you explain why it is called Chicken Bowl?
Well, now, this is a little bit complicated, so bear with me.
It's not that complicated.
I like the Super Bowl, and I like eating fried chicken.
Yeah.
So the Chicken Bowl is a Super Bowl party that doubles as a grand fried chicken eating contest. This year is Chicken Bowl 20.
It is.
Chicken Bowl XX.
Chicken Bowl XX. I can only wait to be around 10 more years for Chicken Bowl XXX.
That'll always be the dream. I got to live that long, so which
right.
creates some challenges.
So Stephen's way of making this event special as the host is that he provides insane quantities of chicken. My way of being a well-mannered guest is that every year I bring corn dog mini muffins. Now,
yeah.
Dan Pashman, have you ever had a corn dog mini muffin?
I have not. And even just hearing those words together sort of broke my brain. So can you tell me what that is?
Okay. How you make a corn dog mini muffin, you make a really good like cornbread batter, and then you get mini muffin tins. And there's a recipe for these on a website called Iowa Girl Eats. And
sounds about right.
Yep. So yeah. Many of my favorite things.
Okay.
In one.
Yeah. So you take a mini muffin tin and you put cornbread batter into each little thing. And then you take like an inch long piece of hot dog and you put it in each one, you know, until it's like just about level with the batter. And then you bake them. So the cornbread comes kind of like up around the edges of the piece of hot dog. And it comes out as like a little cornbread muffin with a hot dog in the middle. And it is the simplest thing you have ever heard of in your life. Tell me I'm not right about this, Stephen.
You are completely right about
this. I could bring like 300 of them, yeah, and people would eat all of them like by halftime.
The only comparable item that anyone has ever brought to Chicken Bowl, my friend Alaska Joe used to bring a gigantic tray of what he called pigs on horseback, which were little smokies wrapped in bacon.
Yeah, so, and by the way, that's why those were called pigs on horseback, and Alaska Joe is called Alaska Joe because his name's Joe and he's from Alaska. Now, Dan.
All this terminology is
exactly.
Very complicated.
We're trying to explain the terminology. So if you are not like Stephen, if you're having a Super Bowl party, but you're not like Stephen, you don't want to provide hundreds of pieces of fried chicken to your guests and encourage them to eat until they feel vaguely ill, what would you recommend in terms of being a good Super Bowl host?
Well, the first thing I would say, even before we get to the food itself, is just setting up your home to receive or to host a Super Bowl party. I think one of the interesting sort of unique challenges of a Super Bowl party is that you have a lot of different constituencies. For many people, this is the one football game a year they're going to watch.
That's true.
Yep.
And so you're going to have some people there who really want to watch the game, some people who only care about the commercial, some people who only care about the halftime show, some people who only care about socializing with the other people there. One of the biggest pieces of advice I have is if you have the space and the resources, you want to have multiple viewing areas.
Yeah.
Even if it means putting a TV in not the most ideal place, even if it means that a TV is in the kitchen or someplace where there's not a big seating area, that way the people who care less about the game can kind of gather in a way that they can enjoy themselves without disturbing the people who want to really focus on the game.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And in terms of food, I think that the types of food, it's no accident that we tend to associate finger foods with watching sports, because really finger foods go with watching anything, because you don't want to have a plate, you don't want to have utensils. It always bothers me when people try to be healthy at a Super Bowl party and so they serve a salad. There should be no need for forks or knives at your Super Bowl party.
Yep.
Everything should be able to be eaten by hand, all kinds of dips. And I think beyond the classic dips. I mean, I love good chips and guac, and we can talk about strategies for that. I love a good 7-layer dip. But, you know, there's a million different kinds of dips out there. I love a good white bean dip. Think about how your dips go together. You know, you could serve a whole meal that's just dips and things to be dipped into.
Stephen's whole Super Bowl party is how dips go together. Have you ever been to Chicken Bowl, Dan? It's just a bunch of dips. Go ahead.
You want contrast in your dips. Don't serve all creamy dips or all spicy dips. You know, you want some salty, some spicy, maybe some sweet, some that have some crunch built into them. You want variety in your dips. And I think if you do that, if you think from that approach, you could serve a whole meal just in dips.
Hmm. Wow. This dip buffet. Dan Pashman buffet. Is inventing the dip buffet. Wow.
Yes, I'm a big fan. Or like dips of the world. Put different dips in different rooms. You know how like maybe you remember in college at like an around the world party and each room would have a different drink?
Yes.
Do it. Do around the world except instead of drinks, you do dips.
Wow. I was thinking I've got like four main rooms that Chicken Bowl is hosted in. If I have a leg room, a wing room, a breast room, and a yes. thigh room.
Yeah.
I will say like I scoffed at the salad, but last year someone brought a gigantic tray of salad to Chicken Bowl and it just got devoured.
Oh, I thought you were going to say someone threw it over someone else's head when the team won at the end. Like,
like
Gatorade.
Confetti.
It just
yeah.
became, was like the Gatorade. Now,
a vegan Gatorade dunk.
Exactly.
But yeah. I do think part of it though is like this used to be the party that I threw when I worked at The Onion and now it's a party that I throw working at NPR and NPR is full of a bunch of arugula chomping soccer watchers.
Yeah, it's true.
And so I need to prepare accordingly.
As I said, the first time Stephen made that joke many years ago, nothing against arugula or soccer or NPR.
Well, I was going to ask, I'm curious to hear, Stephen, how have the chicken eating habits changed over the 20 years that you've been hosting this event? As your friends have changed and gotten older, how is it different?
It's just a bunch of pikers now. I mean, it used to be, like there was one Chicken Bowl, I think it was 2003, where it came down to two people, I was one of them, at the end of the game, like racing to just wolf as much chicken as possible to try to win the coveted Chicken Bowl championship tiara. Now, like I think it was last year, second place was a six-year-old.
Yeah.
So.
You might be surprised to hear, Dan, that the people of National Public Radio eat less fried chicken than the people of The Onion.
Well, and right.
I am not surprised.
Right. And also, like, I started it when I was, 23, 24, and now I'm 43.
Yeah.
One reason I don't compete as much in it, like, as Linda has often said, like, it's not necessarily that enticing to say, come watch me win an eating contest at my house.
That's just Thursday.
That's just Thursday. Exactly. Yeah. If you just want to watch me weeping over a bucket of chicken, like that's any day. But it's usually now won by like an intern. You know,
it's
like
true.
They're hungry. They're
some
young.
Young, hungry,
they
NPR
want,
music intern.
They want to impress people.
Exactly.
And so
exactly.
like they'll come and.
Yeah. So but Dan, from a guest perspective, if you are attending a Super Bowl party and you're supposed to bring something, can you talk a little bit about as a guest? What would you bring?
Yes, I can. I had Amy Sedaris on the Sporkful podcast a little while back. We were talking about holidays, but I think the same thing applies. Because she gave such good advice, I said to her, like, what do you want people to bring? And I've always carried her advice with me, which is why I bring it up. Well, first she said that she would want people to bring her weed. But then she said something useful like kitty litter or ice or cups. And that's obviously a bit of a joke, but I do feel like if you're going to bring something, either make it something that you know you really like, you're sure other people will like, or something that is useful to the host if it doesn't get used at the party.
Sure.
I agree. And the thing that people bring to Stephen's house that is useful, even if it does not get consumed at Chicken Bowl, is, of course, beer.
Exactly.
I do want to say, though, just you brought up weed. That is a performance-enhancing drug at Chicken Bowl. So it is a completely performance-enhancing drug-free environment.
Banned substance. I'm sorry. Go on.
That's
there,
right.
Dan.
Can I ask one more question about Chicken Bowl?
Sure.
Stephen, I'm curious to hear, speaking of performance enhancement and the way that competition works, how do you measure? Because I assume you're talking bone-in fried chicken.
Oh, there's a whole thing.
Do you weigh the pieces and then subtract the weight of the bones?
I've got a whole like point system. It's basically like the Chicken Bowl equivalent of the Electoral College.
So are breasts worth the most?
Yes.
So, Dan, I know that you have some specific ideas about a couple things I wanted to ask you about, one of which you mentioned chips and guac. Can you give me a good chips and guac tip?
I'll give you a couple of quick tips. First of all, I think you can tell a lot by a person by the way that they dip their chips into guacamole. So if you have a classic triangular chip.
Sure.
I'll ask each of you, do you hold one point of the triangle and dip 2 points? Or do you hold a straight edge and then lead with a single point?
If you hold the 1 point and you dip the 2 points, then you're a dip hog.
Well, you're also at risk of breaking the right. entire thing into the bowl and winding up with a tiny
triangle. A tiny triangle
speck.
Of bare chip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, you guys both work at NPR, don't you?
I mean, what's the organizing principle here, there,
well,
buddy?
First of all, Linda, you're worried about appearing as a dip hog mm-hmm. at a fried chicken eating competition.
That's right. You don't want to be gauche.
I don't compete. Please understand. Okay, I've never competed in the fried chicken eating contest.
Steven, you're taking the safe route, you know. Mm-hmm. If you hold 1 point and dip 2 points, it is true that you increase your chance of breakage. And it is true, Linda, that you will get it with more dip on your chip. But I mean, there should be enough dip for everyone.
It's true.
The secret to avoiding breakage is that you want to avoid what many people do is they will insert the chip straight down mm-hmm. into the dip, and then they do this lever action that puts an undue amount of strain on the chip, and that is where you get breakage.
Yes.
Instead, what you want to do is to hold a single point, get one finger underneath the bottom of the chip to stabilize, and then sweep across the top of the dip in a sort of a snowplow kind of a motion.
Sure.
Nice. I like it. Now, I understand that you also, I do want to ask you about one other dip thing, which is I understand you have very strong feelings about 7-layer dip. Is that correct?
I do. Especially, like, whatever ingredients you want, that's up to you. But I think that too often people build their 7-layer dip in the wrong kind of vessel. Often it's in more of a cake pan mm-hmm. than a wider, flatter pan. And the problem that you run into is in a great 7-layer dip, the idea is you're trying to bring all these different flavors together. If you build a very deep 7-layer dip, then it's not possible to get to the bottom in one scoop. 7-layer dips should be shallow, and the layers should be thin, so you're getting small amounts of each. So don't build it in a tall, narrow vessel. Build it in a wide, flat vessel with thin layers of each so that you can take a single chip and get all 7 layers in one bite.
You want it to be like one of those fancy torts in a French restaurant with the little thin yes. layers of cake. With the little thin layers of icing.
Exactly. Like a refried bean Napoleon.
That's perfect. That's absolutely perfect. Well, at any rate, if any of you have a Super Bowl party to attend or to host, we hope that this is all terribly useful to you, as I know it will be to me and to Steven. Dan Pashman is the host of the Sporkful Food Podcast at WNYC, which is available wherever you got the podcast you're listening to right now. Full episodes of Pop Culture Happy Hour are also available every Friday. Thank you so much, Dan, for coming and sharing your expert knowledge with us.
My pleasure, guys. Enjoy the game. Good luck at Chicken Bowl, Steven.
Thank you so much.